Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. On today's show, we have Darren Whitehead. He's a pastor, he's an author, he's a leader, he's a father, and he's also, as you'll hear, an Australian. We just recently sat down with him in Nashville and had the most amazing conversation. He's recently written a book called The Digital Fast, which is, I think, a gift to anyone in our time that is trying to figure out how do we balance technology and go in and out of rhythms of health and put technology in its proper place in our life. This is a gift and a resource. So I have absolute confidence that you will enjoy our conversation today. Also, if you haven't had a chance to rate or subscribe, I just want to say thank you to everyone who has done that, that's left a comment. That helps get the word out with our ministry and all the things that we're doing, and it is just a huge help. So if you haven't had a chance to do that, would you please do that? And also know that we are on YouTube now, so you can click the link in the show notes. You can watch all of these conversations that we're having week in, week out. But truly, enjoy today's conversation with Darren Whitehead. All right, Darren Whitehead, welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you guys.
So glad you're here.
Second interview. Thank you again to Gabe and Rebecca Lyons, Think Headquarters Studio. Here we are.
Here we are.
Here we are, which is great. Your hometown.
It is my hometown. Yes.
Obviously, from the accent, gives you away, maybe not your original hometown. Give us a little background of that.
Yeah, I moved to the United States in 1998.
98.
I been here for 26 years. I just turned 50, so I am more American than I am Aussie these days. Lived more of my life in your country.
Okay.
I came over here to work in radio, actually. And
that is amazing. I was thinking the whole time you were talking, I was like, you have such, I don't know if you were going to do speaking, but such a radio voice. You have such a great voice.
Oh, that's nice of you to say.
I mean it.
It's when my wife criticizes me, I'm like, baby, this is the moneymaker, okay? So this is the life
is
that
American?
I've given you.
Or
she's American.
Okay.
Yeah. She's from Nashville. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I came over to work in radio, and I was in Melbourne, Australia, at the American embassy trying to get a work permit, and they misread my file. They made an administrative error. They gave me the wrong kind of visa. They gave me a pastor's visa.
No way.
I had never been a pastor, and I had no plans of ever becoming a pastor. But if I wanted to stay in America, I had to become a pastor.
You're lying. I've never heard this story.
This is the absolute truth.
Wow.
Sometimes people ask me, how did the Lord lead you into the ministry? I say the U.S. government called me into this. And out of fear of deportation, I just keep preaching every single week. I'm terrified.
Wow.
So yeah, that was 1998. Came over and I started working at a church.
Okay.
And I got married to an American girl in 2002.
Okay.
Then we moved to Chicago and lived in Chicago. We were in Nashville. We moved to Chicago for 8 years, had all of our kids. I have three daughters.
Yes.
All of our kids in Chicago. And then in 2012, we moved back to the Nashville area and planted Church of the City.
Wow. That was only 2012.
2012.
I don't know why I thought it was longer. So many questions. What were you doing in Chicago?
I was at a church called Willow Creek.
Oh, yeah. Never heard of it. Yeah.
And and so I started out as the college pastor there. It was a college ministry called Axis.
Okay.
And I did that for a little bit. And then I got asked to be a teaching pastor there. And so I was teaching pastor to the adults for the following 6 years or whatever.
Wow.
So yeah, that was a really amazing time in my life. Yeah.
And then transferred to, so then 2012, you have three girls.
Mm-hmm.
And what are their ages now?
They are 18, 15, and 13.
Okay.
All teenage girls. Yes.
That's going to be another episode.
So many hormones.
Yeah. There's always someone crying in my house. Yeah. It's usually me.
Yep.
But always. Yes.
Mm-hmm. We have one boy and three girls. Yeah. We just have the boy on top. But man, I'm telling you. Yeah,
a lot of feelings.
We feel it. Yeah. We feel what we feel and we talk about it. Okay. So then the moving, you came to Nashville, had a heart to start Church of the City.
Yes.
And I mean, we'll get into it, but what was that process like? Was it immediately like, okay, this is good. We have a great core. Did you guys, it sounds like your wife's from here.
Mm-hmm.
So when you came out here, what was that process like?
Yeah.
I mean, planting that's a big question, I know. So feel free to answer.
We had some friends that were in town here. Okay. And, you know, I was a youth pastor, you know, 10 years earlier in this area.
Oh, okay.
So the kids that were in youth ministry 10 years earlier were now 10 years older. So they were like getting married and having kids, and they started being grownups.
Wow.
So in one sense, some of the remnants of our old student ministry became the core of the beginning of our church.
Okay.
We planted two churches on the same day.
Whoa.
One in East Nashville and one in Franklin.
Okay.
So one in more of an urban context and one in more of a suburban context. And we gathered in the morning at one, and then we packed up everything, put it in a trailer, drove across town, set it all up again, and put on the surface again.
As if planting one church is not hard enough.
Yeah. Apparently we were gluttons for punishment. But
yeah, I was going to say, that says a lot.
We loved it, honestly.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, was the heart to make sure that you could reach two different communities?
Yes.
So from day one, you guys have had multi-campuses.
Yeah. We really wanted to have a diversity in congregant. Mm-hmm. And so one was more of a left-leaning church, another was more of a right-leaning church.
Interesting.
One was more diverse, one was a lot less diverse.
Mm-hmm.
One was lower socioeconomic, the other was wealthier.
Wow.
So it was like crossing worlds.
Yes.
Going from one congregation to the other.
Wow.
But we loved it. I mean, we really having the time of our lives.
Yeah. Has it stayed that way?
Yes. Yes is the short answer. This is all pre-COVID, of course.
Sure.
So we were in an area called East Nashville, which is one of the more progressive neighborhoods in the greater Nashville area.
Okay.
We have since moved slightly to right downtown in the city.
Okay.
So we are right in the metro center of Nashville.
Okay.
And then we have another location in Franklin, and then we have another location that is even further south in an area called Spring Hill.
Oh, yeah.
All three of them have a different dynamic in terms of the profile and demographic and psychographic.
Wow. Yeah. I'm sure that's so interesting. And do you stay at one? Do you preach at one? Do you go around? Is it video? Like, how do you have campus pastors, obviously? How does it work? How does it work for you guys?
Yeah. So we don't do very much video.
Yeah.
We have live teaching at all three. I do rotate around a little bit, but predominantly I am at one, and we have two other guys that are leading the other two.
That's
we
so kind of
write our sermons together.
Oh, wow.
And we work on content, develop content, pray through it together, share ideas.
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of a way of sermon writing in community rather than it being completely a solo sport.
I love that.
Yeah.
Is that hard?
It's wonderful. Okay. No, it's easier.
Is it easier? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the entire time. It's not like I'm sitting next to a dude for 12 hours writing a sermon.
You know? Like cheating off of his
but
notes.
But you know, what's funny about it is like sermon writing is a lonely thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're writing on something and you think, that's pretty good. You know, that's really moving. But you've got no one to bounce it off of, right? And I like think an idea is really great, and 4 hours into developing it, I'm like, you know what? I don't like this. Or this metaphor completely breaks down in a way that I have not even thought of. So when you have other people to bounce stuff off of, they can be like, and particularly when you know each other well, it can be like, nah, dude, that's not it. Or like, oh, bro.
Yes.
That's got some heat on it, you know?
Yeah.
So you're just able to get a little bit of a feedback loop.
Yeah.
And you're able to do it in community, and ideas spark ideas. And sometimes someone shares an idea of something that happened in their childhood, and we're all like, that happened to me too, bro. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Wow. I love it. I'm a verbal processor anyway.
Yeah, I am too.
And so I really love having people tell me that's strong, that isn't, in terms of, a feedback loop.
Yeah.
You just turned 50.
Yes.
That's a moment, right?
It is a moment. Yeah. So I'm no longer a young man. And I feel like for my entire adult life, I'm like the young pastor, you know? And even sort of like the young pastor that's doing surprisingly better than we thought he'd do, you know? Like, we underestimated him, but you know what? He's doing okay, you know? But now I'm the pastor.
The pastor. Yeah. It's just not the young guy anymore.
It's just like, I'm just not a young dude anymore, you know? Yeah.
There's so many identity questions with that.
Right.
But I'm thinking with, you said, I can't remember if we heard it. Some friends, Andrew East, Sean Johnson.
Yes.
You were on their podcast recently.
I love them.
Yeah, yeah. We were actually meant to record today, but we just had to move it to another day. But I can't remember how we came across it, but we came across your interview with them recently. And I think you had shared a story that I just wanted to ask you about. And then we're going to get into the book and all the beautiful stuff that you're putting into the world. But you were talking about, you had just, I think, come from like a party of some sort.
I did.
And it was like your daughter and your 18-year-old daughter. Can you tell us that story? It was beautiful.
That's such a, I was so tender coming from that.
I can only imagine.
Because you schedule things on your calendar ahead of time and all of that. And I had this party that my staff had put on for me. And
beautiful.
My daughter came to it and she wanted to be there and she wasn't going to speak. And then she decided on the day, like, I really want to say some things, you know.
Wow.
So she got up and she looked at this whole room of people and she said, my dad's my best friend. Oh. And I tell him everything. Oh. And honestly, I could feel it right now.
Yeah.
I mean, my heart was leaping out of my chest.
Yeah.
And I didn't almost hear anything else that was said with anyone else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it was really... Wow. It was a condensed moment in her childhood that I will remember forever. Just sort of representative of, we have a very special relationship.
Hmm.
Yeah.
For her to be willing to talk publicly about that and just to sort of say to people, yeah, we're really close.
Hmm.
It just meant so much to me.
I can only imagine.
It didn't surprise me that she said that we were this close. It didn't surprise me that she thinks that. It surprised me that she told everyone that, you know?
Yes.
Well, so it was really moving. And I was literally driving straight from that to being with them. And and I was like still a little misty-eyed when I came on in. And I was hey, guys.
I mean, I think you'll probably have an emotion for a very long time, if not forever, from just even the thought of that. I can't even imagine. But that speaks to something, and I know, after we get into this question, I know you, Elizabeth, sweetie, you'll have a lot of them, but I'm thinking that doesn't ever just happen, right? Mm-hmm. And honestly, that interview, or at least that story to me, and I didn't get to listen to the full of it, but I was just so moved because it speaks so much of who you are. And dude, just like we have this policy that if you say something good about somebody, you have to tell them to their face or at least text them or voice memo them. Like if you say something
good about somebody behind their back.
Yeah. So say something good to them. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And dude, your reputation has so preceded you and your integrity and the kind of man that you are and the family, like, so just good job. Like from a distance of someone who doesn't get to interact with you, doesn't get to rub shoulders on a daily basis, you've done just a beautiful work. And everybody that was even in the studio, they're like, oh, Darren's coming. They're like, we know him and we're really encouraged by him. Like they go to, I think they all go to your church.
Yeah.
But all that said, I just wanted to just let you know that, but that doesn't just happen. So what are some of the things, the rhythms, the rituals, the things that you guys are doing that you're doing with your girls, you know, as a girl dad, to really foster that kind of relationship?
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying, honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a time where it almost seemed normative that pastors' kids resented the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, it's a different era. Most generations tend to overcorrect on the previous generation. All of that sort of happens. It's sort of like a pendulum swing. But I grew up in a time where the baby boomers were in charge of the church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these baby boomers would say to me, I have so much regret. I prioritized the church over my own children.
Yes. Yeah.
And now the children are kind of resentful towards the church as the place that took my parents away or took my dad away.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I saw so much of that that I went into this with my game face on. Like, I cannot allow my children to see the church as being the place that just takes all my dad's time, focus, attention.
Yeah.
So I was very careful. My wife Brandy and I have been very careful to involve them in the church and to let them see how much we personally love being a part of the church and serving God's people.
Yes.
And that this is something that we don't have to do, but we get to do. And by God's grace, so far, all three of my children are really involved in our church and love our church and love the Lord. And I'm very thankful for that. And don't consider that a default, you know?
Yeah.
But I've taken each of my daughters on lots of trips as I've traveled around the country and spoken at things. My daughters have been to all the states and all the places, and we've just done so many daddy-daughter trips.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's really wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, when I travel by myself, I don't particularly like it. You know, I don't like airports, and I've done it a lot, and I'm kind of tired of it in one sense. But when I take one of my girls, every time we're waiting somewhere is a time for us to connect with one another, to develop jokes that only we know, you know, just so special. From, you know, sitting on a tarmac of an airplane to waiting in line to get a rental car to choosing a restaurant to where you're going to eat. Like, it's really special. And every parent who's older than me says, you know, these years are fleeting. And I do not want to miss this. And we are now with my 18-year-old at the point in her childhood where we're counting backwards instead of forwards.
Of course.
Talking about lasts instead of firsts.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there may not even be lasts, but I mean, we're just kind of really aware that her high school years are coming to a close.
Yeah. She's a senior.
And she's a senior in high school. So there is a coming transition, whatever that's going to look like. Things are not going to quite be the same. And, you know, the advice that was given to me was to do everything you can to maintain a connection with your children and to do what you can to join them in their world rather than just trying to get them to join you in yours. And so that means I'm trying to learn their interests. I'm trying to understand the music that they like listening to.
What are they like right now? Do you know?
I don't want to say daughter's like right now because I don't want to go on record.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Every now and then I'm like, pulling a pastor card like, darling, do you really think that music is going to build your spirit?
Oh, yeah. Oh, us too. Like, same. But the music's so good.
Right? So good, Dad. I don't listen to the words.
Well, you're not wrong, but.
Yeah, we had, who's that? Yeah, we've had some funny conversations recently about that. But like, the song is so good.
It's good.
And I agree. Like, I love music.
Right.
Wow. So a lot of intentional, wanting to do it different.
And I think one of the things is there's no doubt that if your parents are pastors, your family will pay a price. Like, there is a price that comes with doing this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There are Easter and Christmas. We're so busy.
Oh,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I do weddings and funerals, and these things come at inopportune times. There are people in crisis, you know, like it's all of the above. But I want my daughters to understand that there are times that we get to do things that are so uniquely special. You know, we have someone in our church who says, hey, you know, I have a lake house if you guys want to stay there. And, you know, if we ever get to do anything like
that. Yes,
yes. I want to underscore, I want my girls to understand there's a price and there's a privilege with this job. And it's both. You know, there's a burden and there's a blessing.
Yes. Wow.
And it's not just one, right? So I want them to grow up with the narrative, yes, there was a burden for this. Yes, it cost our family something. But we got to do some cool things too.
And
we got to do them as a result of dad's job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we got both.
Yeah.
And I want to frame their childhood through that lens.
Hey, Brooke here with Intentional. Just wanted to pause really quick and say thank you to all of our legacy builders and invite you to potentially become one today. If you didn't know, Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit, which is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope, practical help, and healing to families all around the world, in marriage, in parenting, in grandparenting, in all sorts of relationships. We can only do that with you, our partners, our legacy builders. If you're curious what a legacy builder is, that's simply a person who's decided to say, not only do I want to pray for Intentional, I want to help Intentional, even in financial terms, to help fuel this ministry and this mission forward. So if you haven't had an opportunity to check that out, you can go to intentionalparents.org. You can click the link in the show notes, but we just want to invite you today. Pray about becoming a legacy builder and partnering with us in a deeper way to help families all around the world. All right, back to this week's episode.
I'm thinking of, we were in full-time ministry, pastoral ministry for 18 years before we jumped into this world. So we so understand that. And still to this day, I think we were just recently on a trip and the house was a friend of ours. We're like, yeah, we're not using it. Go ahead, use it. It was in a very rough spot of the world called Maui. And it was just, you know, and we're sitting there just like so grateful and thankful and just being like, this doesn't, you know, it's a similar deal. Like you guys, you realize like
we're having that conversation
with our kids around dinner, like people just, this is people's extra that they just want to give and generously. Right. And then all of our kids were like, yeah, we want to make enough money so we can. And oh, actually our son was like, well, dad, if I do what I'm thinking, which I don't know what that is actually currently, because it changes. He said, you know, I'll probably buy a house and I'll let you guys use it if you want. And I was like, oh, thanks.
That's so sweet.
I was like,
that is, so, you are so generous. Yeah, right. Thank you.
Thank like, you.
He probably has some caveats. You need to have a cleaner. You know? I can already tell.
With his just, he 100% would. He is my older brother, John Mark 2.0.
Yeah.
Like, oh, is that right?
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's really funny how that happens. Like different personality types will kind of emerge in different families, and which is really fun.
But I love that you are using what could be an opportunity to foster some resentment, you being taken away, you having to go somewhere and speak. You're using it as an opportunity for connection and really for teaching when you're framing that life is mixture.
It's
both beautiful and it's hard.
Yes.
It's both this is a burden and this is a gift. You're building that into the rhythm of even your relationship with them. And I think that's so beautiful and rare for dads to do, I feel like, in our current time. Maybe more intuitive for moms to do and harder for dads. And so it's no surprise to me at all that your daughter said that because she's getting to experience connection with you.
Yeah, there's something about, and I want my girls to understand that life generally is a mixture of sadness and gladness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And you're never really in a moment where it's all gladness without some sadness. Yes. And you're never in a moment where it's just all sadness without some gladness. And if we can, with our children, foster that as an expectation, then you can actually exist in the world without feeling like somehow you've been screwed over.
Yeah. Yes,
it's
sir.
Like, no. This is the human experience. Mm-hmm. It's both.
Yes. Oh, I'm like coming out of my skin right now in a good way of that. I'm so passionate about that. Mm. And one of the things that I so like, if that's one of the main things our kids get to really like live and experience and expect really that there will be sorrow in their life and there will also be joy and that they can be held in the same hand.
Mm-hmm.
What a gift we're setting them up with for the future. And even in their relationship to Jesus, I mean, how often do you hear the story of somebody who grew up in a Christian home, they've continued to follow Jesus, something really hard happens in midlife, and it shakes their entire foundation because they had no idea that it wasn't even in their theology of if I do these things, then God will do these things,
right.
Or if a good God would never let me suffer like that because it hasn't been a part of their foundational years.
That's
so
right.
I love that. And I feel like we need a lot more of that from the church, especially. I feel like it's part of the conversation more now. But like my growing up, I feel like that part of the conversation was kind of not talked about as much. It was more the joy of the Lord is your strength. Like that was quoted a lot, which is so true. So true. but the other part of the conversation was missing a bit, I feel like. And I'm
glad. There's a version of Christianity that exists a lot in the Western world. And it is that God will always overcome. He will always heal. He will always come through. It is just this declaration of success at every turn, you know? And sometimes if someone has built a theology of that exclusively, that when life happens, just, it smashes their theology.
Yes.
Yeah.
Life is complex. And everything didn't go perfect for Jesus. In fact, it kind of ended badly, at least before the resurrection, you know? And, and so I think growing in a maturity of faith is kind of understanding that the gospel is sufficient for the complexity of life. But it is not always turning out the way you want it to turn out.
No.
Yes. I want to kind of turn. So obviously you've been thoughtful around a lot of stuff, especially as a father. And as a pastor, I think you obviously are forced into, I think if you're a good pastor, you are thinking of not only where, how can I help people experience who the real biblical version of Jesus is, like who Jesus says he is. How do I help people experience that, know what that's like, introduce him, give them all the tools. You also have the vein of culture. You're connected with culture, what's going on, how that's changing, and then adapting these two constantly. You recently, when did it come out? The digital fast. What
came out this year?
This year. Okay. I thought it was.
January this year.
I didn't want to misquote, but yeah. So recently came out the book, The Digital Fast, which I really am excited about because we just were talking about Joey Odom. And you guys are actually partnering. They're using your book as part of that. And you guys are partnering together. What a great, 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 great thing you're doing for churches. And he pitched it a bunch, as you could imagine. So he did a great job giving people a heads up of where to find all the content. But it really came from what work you had been processing and doing. In your book, the verse, this blessed me a lot, the opening verse, as you already know, Psalm 119:37, turn my eyes from looking at worthless things and give me life in your ways. So obviously you started the book with this just verse right on the phrase. I just want to know from your perspective, how did this verse inspire your personal journey with writing this book?
Well, I love this verse because it feels like it's written about social media.
It really does. Like when I read it,
worthless things.
Yeah, I was like laughing when I read it. I was like, I thought the same thing. I was like, that is the perfect verse for this.
That's something about the beauty of the depiction of what life is in the Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, this is in the Psalms. Jesus, of course, said in John 10:10, I've come that they may have life. Mm-hmm. The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. Mm-hmm. And I just think if that is the playbook of the enemy, think about how digital media is stealing, killing, and destroying. It's stealing our time. Mm-hmm. It's killing our relationships. Mm. You know, it's destroying the joy and the peace that people have. Mm. And it's all happening through this glowing rectangle that we carry around with us everywhere, you know?
Yes.
And so, you know, we practice a fast as a church every year to start out the first 21 days of every year. We have a season of prayer and fasting. Fasting is perhaps the most neglected spiritual practice from the New Testament in the modern world.
Yep.
And we don't want to do it because it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so it just ends up being one of these things that we don't do very often. But what some people started to say to me is, well, I think I'm going to fast from my phone or I'm going to fast from social media.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I thought, well, that's really interesting, but it's different.
It is.
It's something a little different. Like biblical fasting is fasting from food.
Yep. Yep.
And there is something about the emotion, about the physical experience of being hungry. Mm-hmm. That captures something specifically about what biblical fasting is. Mm-hmm. But fasting from your phone sounded like an equally interesting idea.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do with our church is go, hey, listen, some of you have talked about fasting from your phone and I think that could be cool, but what if we all did that together? Now, I didn't know if this was even going to work.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And I didn't know if people were just going to be kind of like, hey, dude, why are you talking about our phones? Like, stay in your lane and teach the Bible, you know?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's sort of an odd thing for a church to do. At least it felt like the first time I was talking about it.
Yeah.
So what I discovered, and I didn't go into this thinking this, but what I discovered is that phone addiction or people spending the amount of time they spend, the average American, one study found is the average American is spending 7 hours and 4 minutes a day on their smartphone. And Gen Z is spending over 9 hours a day. So, I mean, it's just astronomical. And so we knew that this was an epidemic of sorts. But if you ever say to a teenager, you know, if social media is making you depressed, then why don't you just get off of it? They say, I can't. I mean, all my friends are on it, you know? And so it is the fear of missing out, right?
This is
our access point for what is happening with our friend group and the world and all of that.
To feel known. Yeah.
That's right. So social scientists call this a collective action problem. This is a problem that we collectively know is harming society. It's having a detrimental impact on our mental health. And yet none of us individually want to withdraw because we will get left out of everything. And so we continue to do it. We continue to perpetuate it. What's interesting is that you can address collective action problems with collective action. So when a community decides to do this together, it's easier.
Absolutely.
So when teenagers are all doing it, your friend group's doing it, your small group's doing it, your parents are doing it, your grandparents are doing it, your neighbors are doing it. Like, you're almost gamifying the entire experience. And you're kind of going, we're going to take a period of time and we are going to step back from these devices, and I can explain exactly what that looks like, but we'll step back from these devices. We'll have a shared experience of getting off of these things, and then let's pay attention to what happens. What happens to ourselves? What do I notice about myself? What do I notice about other people? What do I notice about hearing the voice of God if I am turning down all of this distraction and able to turn up devotion for a season?
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
What I love about what you're saying is so often we're so drawn to that communal action of all of us being addicted to our phones and being on social media together because we're desiring that connection. That's what feels hard to step away from sometimes and other things. But as you were talking, I just was picturing you're moving that connection from being on this isolating device. You're moving the connection to this other collective action, to a community.
Yes.
To real embodied relationship, all centered around we're all doing this together. So people are still getting what they're looking for, but they're getting for it in a way that is so much more helpful and sustainable and embodied versus just...
That's right. And that's what biblical fasting is, by the way. It's not just abstaining from something. It's not just putting something down. It is picking something else up where that was. And so the digital fast is an invitation to withdraw from distraction apps. Right. So you think about the apps that are on your phone through the lens of distraction versus utility. Not all apps are the same thing. You know, you don't open your calculator app and play with it for 46 minutes and then go, gosh, what have I done with all my time?
Really,
you know?
Wasted a lot.
So not all apps are the same thing.
Yeah.
So the distraction apps on your phone are things like social media and news and video apps and and shopping apps, even email is a distraction. You can just burn your life away staring at those things.
I would love to burn email.
Utility apps are things like phone and text and, you know, how to use maps to get around the you know, in your car and your calculator and a camera. You know, like these are just utility functions. So the digital fast is a call to reduce your smartphone down to a utility device. One way of saying it is make your smartphone dumb. And then when it is a utility device, you will intuitively find yourself looking at it, opening it up all throughout the day and realizing, oh, there's nothing cool to look at, and put it down again. Until you ultimately break the habit and you just stop looking at it all
because
the time
you don't
for
care.
No reason.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you did this as a church.
We did.
Before you wrote the book.
Yes. In fact, the book was a result of other churches saying, we're really intrigued by this. Can you tell us what you did, what you learned, how you did it? So I read a bunch of books and I talked to a bunch of people and I didn't exactly know how we were going to do it before I researched how to do it.
Yeah.
And there's basically four movements that went on in it.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
So the first movement is to detach. Mm-hmm. And I've got two versions, actually. I've got a 40-day version and a 28-day version that is coming out. They're both four movements. One's four movements of 10 days. The other's four movements of 7 days.
Okay.
But the first movement is to detach. And kind of like any other low-grade addiction, when you withdraw, when you attach from something, you have some degree of withdrawal. Mm-hmm. It is a change of some sort. That's why doing it with other people is so much better because you're sort of laughing about the fact that you need another hit and you can't get one. You know what I mean?
You too,
But there is a detachment that comes from that. The second movement is to discover. What happens is when you detach, you start noticing things that you weren't noticing before. Mm. You notice it about yourself. Mm-hmm. So what we tend to do is when we have an unpleasant feeling, if we feel shame, anxiety, fear, sadness, loss, these are all unpleasant feelings. Mm-hmm. And what we tend to do is grab our phone and look at something and distract ourselves from an unpleasant feeling.
Yeah. Yes.
What that means is that we have all of these feelings that we are not processing in real time. We're just stuffing them, covering them over doom scrolling cat videos. You know what I mean? And what can happen is, and some believe that the result of not dealing with these feelings in real time and letting them process through your body and get them out, what happens is you stuff them. And like a beach ball that you're holding underneath the surface, at some point, this thing comes up involuntarily.
Yes.
Sometimes it looks like a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And there is a rise of panic attacks in this next generation, in this anxious generation.
Yes.
And some believe that what is contributing to that is the fact that we are just numbing ourselves all the time.
Oh.
So you discover things about yourself. Oh, I am a little afraid about this. Or I feel anxious about
this. A comedian just came out. It was the funniest / weirdest thing. He said, how come I don't see kids in casts anymore? And I was like, wait a minute. I don't see many kids in casts.
Right.
I mean, and it was just an interesting observation. He goes, where did all they go? And then he basically went on to say, everyone has mental disorders now. So when we were growing up, everyone looked like they had just gone to the ER when they're at school, they're playing outside, everyone's getting hurt all the time. Now everything's a mental disorder. Now he was poking fun, making a joke, but there was so much truth that.
Jonathan Haidt wrote a book called The Anxious Generation, which is sort of like the definitive book on this topic.
And it just came out.
Yeah.
And he uses this one phrase that is so hauntingly clear. You immediately understand. He said, this generation has moved from a play-based childhood to a phone-based childhood.
Mm-hmm. No.
Like when you hear that framework, you're like, oh my gosh, that's so true.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, and then all the implications that come from that, you know?
Yes.
So yes, so, that is true. Yeah. One of my daughters is at a school in the area here as a senior, and this is the first year that they have gone phone free with their schools.
Wow. Is it in result of the book?
It's certainly
influenced it.
It's influenced it. Yeah.
Sure.
I've been talking with some of the faculty about this.
Yeah.
And several schools in our area have said, you know, this has been building for a while and we just needed like declare, you know?
Yes.
So the idea is bell to bell. You don't have your phone from the morning bell to the evening bell and they can use their phones after that. Like, can we give our kids a break
for
6 or 7 hours a day from being glued to these things, you know?
Yes.
So anyway, I asked my daughter on week one of them not having their phones anymore. She goes, you know, Dad, the boys have started playing football again.
That's what he's
like, oh my gosh.
That's such an interesting observation. You're right.
They've started playing football. Yeah. And instead of like all getting together and staring at their phones.
Oh my goodness. That's
all right. So the second movement is to discover. You discover things about yourself. You discover things about other people. How many times are you completely unaware that one of your children are anxious about something? They walk through the living room and you don't even catch it.
Yeah.
Because someone texted you. Which is interrupting really the sacred space of your home and you're dealing with something that's urgent to them and you're completely missing something that is important to your kids.
Yeah.
You know, I shudder to think how much I have missed that I'm completely unaware about. Oh, see, when you when you put that away, when you remove that, you begin to see all of that. You become aware of that. Mm. You're able to reach them in these moments, right? The third thing is you start to discover the voice of God.
Yes.
Like, what has been the net impact of chasing away all the discretionary moments of life?
Hmm.
We pull up at the lights and we're waiting in traffic and we intuitively grab our phone and open it and start looking. Like, instead of like, Holy Spirit, what do you want me to notice right now?
Yeah. Yes.
What should I pay attention to? What themes are you continually rising inside of me that I need to be aware of? You
know?
So we've sort of numbed the voice of God in our lives as well. That's the second movement. The third movement is delight.
Oof.
You detach, you discover, you delight. I was talking to Jonathan Haidt about this. And when I finished describing it, he said, do you want me to tell you the brain science behind why that happens?
Like,
yes, I do. You know, he said, well, what happens is that when your dopamine receptors are overloaded all throughout the day, you're just getting a hit of dopamine all the time. What happens is that your brain stops responding to what dopamine does in your brain. It's like flooded with dopamine, right? Mm. Dopamine, of course, is a pleasurable feeling. It's supposed to make us feel joy. If we are inundating our brains with dopamine, it stops working and we feel numb, not joyful.
Mm.
And it takes a couple of weeks to reset. And after a couple of weeks, so you think by the time you're in week three of this digital fast, your dopamine receptors have gone back to normal.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, when you experience something that provokes dopamine, it produces joy inside of you again. That's why it's delightful.
Wow.
And it's so funny,
that's
right? It's like the most human things become joyful again.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, give me life in your ways. I've come that you may have life. I remember my 13-year-old daughter wanted to bounce on the trampoline outside and wanted me to watch her. And I didn't have my phone.
I was going to say, did you jump?
I did not jump. Although I've got a strong game, but I did not jump. No. But it's just so funny what you notice, right?
Yeah.
I don't have my phone with me because up until that point, I sort of carried it around with me even when I'm at home. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It becomes.
I'm just like, it's not even with me. I walk outside, I'm barefooted. I feel the grass under my feet. I'm like, huh, that feels really great. And then I walk over to the trampoline. I could smell the air. There was this gentle breeze. The sun was setting. And I could hear my daughter giggling and squealing and saying, watch me, daddy. Mm. And I just had like this conscious thought, this is a better life.
Mm.
It's like I was rediscovering how to be human again.
Yeah.
It's like my senses had rebooted.
Interesting.
So that's what happens in the discover phase of a digital fast. The final movement is to determine, what do I want my ongoing digital habits to look like as I come out of this fast? And in the book, I encourage people to think about Marie Kondo, you know, the lady that helps us clean out our closets.
Oh, yeah. She's Netflix, man.
So good, dude, right?
So good.
And so her whole thing is you've got to take an item of clothing and you've got to ask yourself the question, does this produce joy? Does it spark joy?
Came out, I think everyone...
Oh, I went through every inch of our house and got rid of...
It became a joke of like, just take something, oh, this is sparking joy. Or, this is sparking joy.
And now our kids are like, they'll put something away and say, please don't throw it away,
please don't throw away. There's a lot of joy coming from this.
It's sparking tons.
Yeah. So I want people to declutter their digital space. To ask the question, does putting Instagram back on my phone spark joy?
Wow.
Surely there's got to be a middle space between between addiction and Amish, right?
Yes.
There's got to be. Yeah. And so- as you're looking to come out of the digital fast, maybe you're asking yourself the question, having social media on my phone is not sparking joy for me. It doesn't mean you never can go on social media, but maybe you go on your laptop. So instead of checking Instagram 63 times a day, maybe you look at it once and it's for like 6 minutes.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And so it's kind of finding technology and putting it in its healthy place rather than taking over your life. You know, we think that we think that we control our lives through these smartphones, but the truth is our lives are being controlled by them.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So we think we have master over them, but they tend to have mastery over us.
Yes.
And this technology seeped its way into our lives. In 2007, when the iPhone came out, it didn't have an app store. It didn't have social media. It didn't have so many of the things that are the things that like suck our time and attention. But what happened is that this technology has evolved so subtly that the most distractive apps have all come since it first began. And if we're not very careful, these things they will take in. Over our lives.
Yes.
And you just need to ask someone, you know, how's it going for you? You know, when I say to someone, have you ever done a digital detox? Everyone says the same thing. No, but I need to.
Yeah, no, but I need to.
Everyone says that.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
Yeah.
I haven't asked anyone recently, but that makes... I would say if you asked me, I'd probably, yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
That would 100% be my response. But I love the four movement.
Yes.
Because they're so very, very real.
All starting with D as well. There you go.
I'm a preacher, Josh.
Yeah. I know. I just wanted to acknowledge the effort there was very good.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But even just acknowledging that you're going to feel withdrawal, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love what was the second D? I just want to make sure I get the word right.
Discover.
Because what I keep, at least for my own, I'll speak just for my own self. What I've been discovering is how much my phone becomes a distraction because I'm feeling anxiety or because I'm feeling a lot about my life and the reality of my kids or whatever it might be. That's why I go to it so often, because I don't want to feel all of those things. And I know I'm not alone in that. And I feel like that is the part of the conversation, the anxiety piece. We know that the phones are not helping our anxiety. But the reality that we feel all of this anxiety just being human, and we're using our phones to cope with it, which is not actually helping us. And then what do we do with all of that we are feeling, which is why I love the idea of doing it together in community. Because you have people in it with you. You can say, I'm really struggling. I'm feeling extra anxious because I've detached from this thing that was helping me not feel my anxiety.
I can't soothe myself right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And I just, a couple of weeks ago, because for me, the thing that distracts me the most is Instagram. It's the only social media platform I'm on. I don't even like post hardly ever. I'm just infinitely distracted by it. And I've gone in and out of periods of taking it off my phone, taking breaks from it. It's always helpful. And yet I find myself always ending up back doom scrolling all the time. And I finally reached a point where my kids had spoken up. I have no problem.
Oh, I know you don't. I just thank you for
my kids had spoken up enough, and I finally was like, this is not the childhood I want them to remember. Like, I'm doing something about this. So deleted it off my phone, was finally like, this is like a for good thing. I'm making a significant change. That same morning, I went to go drop off one of my kids at a friend's house, and I'm good friends with their mom. We're just chatting for a minute, and I just had this brief moment. I wasn't even fully honest. I just said, this is a huge distraction for me. I just deleted it off my phone. I'm trying something different. She immediately said, me too. Can I do it with you? We had this great conversation where she was like, I am like so, and it's a mom who I never would have expected was distracted by it all the time. I thought she wasn't. I thought she was incredibly present with her kids. I was feeling all sorts of guilt and shame about that.
Yeah.
This great conversation about how she's struggling too. We decide to commit to do it together. We're checking in with it. We decided every Friday we'll give ourselves 15 minutes because I have to check it for some work things. So we get 15 minutes on Friday. So we were texting each other. Okay, it's Friday. How'd you do? Did you stick to your 15 minutes? But it's been so helpful. Every time I'm tempted to download it again or look more than just Fridays, I know that my friend Nicole is doing it with me. And there's so much power in that.
Isn't like, that amazing?
I knew that, but now I'm experiencing that, doing it with somebody else, and it's life-changing. And what I have found is when I go back on, I actually feel all sorts of things that I don't actually want. Right. That I'm like, actually, I don't.
That maybe you didn't even notice before. Yeah.
That I absolutely didn't notice before. Yeah. And the reverse is I'm no longer using it for anxiety. I feel anxiety sometimes going on it. I'm like, I don't like that feeling. That's enough for today. I don't need to look at it anymore.
You know, Instagram, according to the research that's been done, Instagram is the worst for particularly teenage girls.
Yes.
It's the single worst apps, worse than TikTok. TikTok's more addictive, but Instagram is the worst that they experience.
How come?
Well, I've heard it described like this. Instagram is like being in a house of mirrors. You ever been in a house of mirrors? You walk in and the first mirror, your legs are really long and your torso is really short and you look sort of silly. And then you move to the next one and then your legs are really short and wide and your head is kind of weird. And Instagram is there's a new disorder called obsessive comparison disorder.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And what happens is teenage girls live perpetually in like this house of mirrors where they're comparing themselves to this faux reality that has been curated online.
Yep. Mm.
And then when they look in the mirror, all they see is a distorted self and they see all the things that are not perfect in from their perspective. And they're in one sense tormented by it.
Yeah.
There was not a body of research until recently. I mean, relatively recently, about 2020, right? Okay. Yeah. So for a lot of us parents who have teenagers now, I am encouraging younger parents to not do what I did. When my eldest daughter was old enough to do sleepovers and school sports, I wanted to have a phone and I grabbed an old iPhone from a junk drawer and fired it up and gave it to her. Right? Wow. It just sort of seemed like the right thing to do. The average age in America of kids getting a smartphone is 11.
Oof.
So I gave my kids smartphones and I just didn't know any better. There wasn't research that was showing not just a correlation of social media use, smartphones, and mental health, but a causation, which is now very, very clear.
It is very clear.
What is even clearer now is that the most destructive age for social media, the most destructive demographic that is experiencing this is girls going through puberty.
I believe it.
There are two times in the human experience where the brain drastically is wired or rewired. Mm. The first is in utero. The first is when the baby's brain is being built. Second is in puberty.
Yep, yep.
In puberty, your brain is going through a drastic rewiring moment. And if you are going through that rewiring moment at the same time that you're consuming a lot of social media like Instagram, very, very destructive.
Oh.
And the outcome is just this rise, this mental health crisis, cutting and depression and suicide. We have an epidemic that is going on right now.
Yes.
And that honestly is why this book and doing these kind of things is resonating so deeply, is because parents of teenagers are kind of going,
what do I do?
Can you help me?
You know,
and a lot of parents say, well, kind of the ship has sailed, you know, like I've given my kids phones and like, I don't really know what to do. And what I would say to that is, well, if you knew that a ship was sailing, but it was going to crash or sink or go down, you'd do something about that, right? You'd sort of try to turn the ship around. I mean, this is a, like, let's stay with their metaphor, right?
Absolutely.
So my encouragement to parents, if you have kids that are in puberty and they have social media and they have smartphones, no judgment. This is a relatively new research-based phenomenon.
Yeah.
But I would say this, do a digital fast as an entire family.
Yes. Yes.
And then revisit the conversation at the end and say, what do you guys think? How should we be engaging with these platforms? You know, it's funny. When social media was created, we didn't call it platforms. We called it networks. You know, social network. It was a way of connecting with one another. And somewhere along the line, it moved from being a network to a platform. And a platform is where you are projecting yourself to an audience. And it is not about connecting with people at all.
Wow.
That's a good point.
It's a very simple phrase that holds a lot of truth. Yeah, I remember the times when it was primarily for connectivity. So if obviously there's the church movement, which I think is beautiful and agreed that that would happen, but there's a lot of people listening and maybe their church isn't going to do it. What would you say to those listening as a family? They're like, okay, we want to do it. What would your instructions be?
Well, by all means, if you're a part of a family and you live together in a home, like do it together.
Yes.
And this comes with, honestly, this is parents having the humility and the leadership to say to their children, you know what? I don't feel all that great about how I consume this digital content either.
Yeah.
And my guess is you probably aren't feeling that great about it either. What if we all just took some time to step back? Parents tend to get angry watching their kids being on their phones all the time, but they're really, it's really hypocritical, you know? I mean, you walk in and you see all your kids sitting on the sofa, the TV's on and they're all staring at their phones and you're kind of like, these are not the children that I am raising, you know?
And it's always a reaction, like, it like brings up everything that you've ever
done. It really does. Because you just kind of like, this is not what I want my family values
to
be.
Well, and for us, it's not the childhood we had.
That is not the childhood we had. Right. Yeah.
Shows how old we are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they tend to emulate what they're seeing that we are doing. And so I think it takes humility. It takes leadership for parents to say, let's do this as a family. Now, of course, the more people who do it in a sub-community, the more powerful it is.
Yes.
So a school can do it together. Yes. A basketball team can do it together. College group can do it together. A church can do it together. A small group, a neighborhood, whatever are the natural communities that we find ourselves interacting with. If we do it together, it's something you don't have to dig very deep to find that people have an appetite for this.
Yes,
they're just looking for leadership.
Yeah.
Yes. And the thing when it came with our church is like the majority of people had never done it and wanted and had a sense that we should do this.
Okay.
And so there's like this. As a pastor, you're just kind of going, our whole church is doing this. We invite you to do it. And if not now, then when? Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. You're just kind of like, I don't want to do this right now. But here's the time. Here's the moment. Here's the invitation.
Wow.
100% of people who do this are glad they did it.
That's interesting.
No one has ever said, you know, I just wish I'd spent more time doom scrolling cat videos. Yeah, like I wish I could have my time over again and numb out on my phone. No one wants to do that.
Isn't that so funny? We're all kind of a victim to this situation and we're slow to it. So a family, do it together, obviously. That I hear that loud and clear, and I think that is beautiful leadership. I'm thinking of for churches, how do they get connected to this? What's a good way? I know Joey mentioned a little bit, digitalfast25.com. Is that what it is?
Digitalfast2025.com.
Got it.
Is where we're trying to get as many churches as possible to do this, either in the month of January or for the season of Lent.
Yes.
So Lent begins on March the 5th. January is January 1. But let's cooperate with the cultural momentum and let's like not just have our church doing it, but what if hundreds or thousands of churches were doing this?
Incredible. Yes.
You know, this is really an opportunity for the church to bring leadership to a cultural problem. We all feel this.
Yes.
And, you know, whether someone is a person of faith or not, they're wrestling with the same challenges of mental health. Their kids are anxious. Mm. Their kids are stuck on their phones all the time. Mm. They need leadership.
Yes.
This is really a moment where the sub-community, the subculture of the church can say, we're going to rally around this. And whether you're a part of our church or not, we'd invite you to be a part of it.
Yes. Okay. So this is last question of the day. And this isn't actually on topic unless you want it to be. But as a pastor, as a leader, as a dad, as a husband, as somebody who's in the world that we find it right now, what is something that you are being inspired by or learning? And again, this can be on topic or not, but what is something you're being inspired by or learning right now that has just given you hope, that's given you encouragement? It's just something, and again, this could be off topic or not. We've been talking a lot about the digital fast. We've been talking a lot about family, but what's something that like just really blesses you? What's like a final thing you'd want everyone to know?
This is anecdotal, but there is something that is happening in the world right now. And there is something that is happening in my heart as a result. But within the intellectual community, many, many people are coming to Christ right now.
I agree, yeah.
The new atheist movement is sort of collapsing on itself. That may be an over-exaggeration, but I mean, you've just got these iconic moments that are sort of happening at Jordan Peterson and Russell Brand. And
yes, I know.
Some of the new atheists are saying, you know, we have just found that secular humanism is insufficient and void of meaning, and there's got to be something more. And it just brings me so much joy. I see a lot of it actually happening in Britain. And, you know, they are further along post-Christian than the United States. I see more of it happening in Australia. Also a lot more post-Christian. But they're a little bit further down the road of the secular humanist experience. And they're finding that it is unsatisfying.
Yes.
And now there is just this intrigue to this return to ancient wisdom. It seems as though, right, with all of our progress in medicine and technology and luxury and wealth and the kind of experience that we have created for ourselves, and yet people are more unhappy, more anxious, there's more crisis, mental crisis that is going on than ever before. It seems as though a return to these ancient sources of wisdom and literature, there might be something to it.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I'm just seeing this new appetite that seems to be rising up to be returning to the teachings of Jesus, or be turning, returning to the ancient wisdom of Song of Solomon or the Proverbs. Or there is just all of this. There's something in it. You know, Jordan Peterson has been teaching through the book of Genesis.
I know. It's so crazy.
And he's just finding that there is just so much authority and wisdom underneath that. And there are just all of these people that don't even have a theistic view who are flocking to listen to this guy teach the first book of the Bible. You know? There is something that is happening. And I think it's early on. But it really is bringing a lot of hope to me.
Thank you. I mean, honestly, we couldn't be more happy with this conversation. Thank you for depositing your wisdom, your life, your fatherhood into those that listened. And we asked you to pray before we started. And I just loved that part of the line of your prayer, if I can quote you to you, was just basically recognizing that when people have their AirPods in, which they might right now, or they're mowing the lawn or they're in the car, that this would be words of refreshment and life to them. And so thank you. You've done that. You've done that in a huge way. Thank you for all that you've done, the example you are. This has been a treat. So thank you.
Man, it's been a great joy. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. We'll have you again. As long as you'll come. We'll just come out to you. This works great. We'll just come out. We have a studio. You have a studio that's going to be built soon.
Working on it.
Yeah. So we'll let people know about some of the stuff you're working on in the future too. All right. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.